franchising is unique because if someone doesn't do well, it's our fault. And if they do well, it's like on them. Like, it's like, why am I paying you royalty? What did you do when it goes well? But it's interesting that one of the things I've learned, and again, I'm just being candid, is I have owners that bought, like my first franchise owner knew exactly what he was doing, right? Like, it was like literally me and our VP of development at a dinner table, and we had no Z's, and he knew what he was doing.
This is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
What's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy, Chris, and I got my co-host, Mr. Chatty P, in the place to be, looking at me on TTP. Told you I should have been a rapper. I could have been 23 Savage. Not 22, because you already took that role. But 23 Savage, I feel like I could have been that.
Yeah, absolutely. We would have made a hell of a duo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about hell of a, but like, you know, mediocre. Yeah. We could figure some things out. I mean, listen, the Beastie Boys could do it. We could do it.
Surely.
Well, okay, listen. A couple things I want to share on this episode before we jump into like the actual like good shit and important stuff. You know, I wanted to give a quick update on some goals. You know, I'm a big goal planner, man. I like to achieve goals, put all the stuff out there. And, you know, I'm roughly just over a month into some chasing down some of my goals. One of them was I wanted to learn Spanish, better Spanish, right? So I downloaded the Babbel app and I've been, you know, taking these Spanish lessons and like learning some of the things. And, that way I can have more than like cerveza, baños, you know, like I can have more of an intelligent conversation because I, you know, in Mexico, a fair amount. So I'd started to learn that a little bit. My progress is good, right? I've learned quite a few things, so I feel good. Like, I'm checking the box. So far, January, I'm good to go on that. But I took one giant leap for mankind yesterday, Chad, and I enrolled in a class at Purdue. See how I tied that together there?
Let's see that.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, I am a huge Purdue fan. But did not get to go to school there because they didn't want me as bad as I wanted them. So in an effort to be alum, I took a graduate class. I signed up for it. And I should pass it with flying colors because it's digital marketing and analytics. I just want to see what they're teaching the kids these days, right, that are coming in, you know, into the business. So I'm going to see if I can actually make it through it. But I had my meeting with the administrator yesterday. I'm in. Starts February 21st.
There you go.
Pull her up.
That's right. I'll put when do you graduate?
It's October.
October. All right. Well, I'll put it on the calendar. We'll be up there to at the ceremony.
I don't know that there is a ceremony. I think it's just
we're gonna make one. We're gonna have one.
We're gonna have one on here. Okay. If I can graduate. If I don't graduate, then that means that I quit. And I didn't accomplish it. And I should probably go back to figuring out what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Okay. So that's a real story. I haven't told Anna yet. So she'll find out here shortly. The commitment's small. It's no big deal. Another quick thing, man. I'm excited because you and I are going to be at a conference together here in a few months. The Transform Conference down in Texas. As well as a couple of our buddies. You know, Tommy will be down there speaking at the same event. Mr. Chris Hoffman will be down there speaking at the event, dude. But this will be the first time we're going and speaking at a roofing focused conference together.
I know. I'm excited. Always good to talk to people in different trades and see what's going on and see what's working there that we can maybe pull over to what we're doing and vice versa. So yeah, I'm really excited. Get down into Dallas. What's that? Second week of April. So.
April 14th through 16th is the residential side. Now he's doing a lot of stuff. He's starting to break in quite a bit to home services because some of the stuff is applicable, which is why we're all coming down there. You guys are coming down there as well. It's going to be great. I got off a meeting with him too, and he's done a great job putting together a pretty good event. So I'm excited to go to it. So our guest is somebody that I met at the first franchise event I actually ever attended. And this was the Franchise Springboard Conference, and I don't remember where the hell it was now that I think about it. Dan, where were we? Where was that conference? Was it East Coast somewhere?
Philadelphia.
Okay. So it was in Philadelphia, clearly memorable. But best thing that came from that event was, one, it was cool to kind of go and just watch how the franchise world, you know, just to learn about the franchise world from a different perspective, like in it, and then learn what Z's and Zors are. We'll talk about that. Now, Dan is in the franchise business. I've been in the franchise business a long time, but hear me, this podcast is not about starting a franchise, okay? Not about starting a franchise. It's just about his journey and a lot of the things that he's done to build out his franchise, which is rapidly growing, that's applicable in really all businesses. So think general business, you know, multi-location business, things like that. So quick intro on my man Dan is, he's a chief executive officer and co-founder of Voda Cleaning and Restoration. I know how important that part is to you, Dan. Founder and chief executive officer of the Franchise Playbook, co-host of the Franchise Founders Podcast, which is, dude, actually pretty good. I listened to it. It's you. You carry it, though. And then you've been playing in the franchise world for quite a long time. And it's been, you know, I got to spend some good time with him at the Franchise Spring War Conference, and just, you know, one, we just hit it off. We connected and I liked what he's doing and what he's building. He's a mover and shaker and just a guy that gets shit done, and he's growing and he's ambitious. And like, just, you know, I liked him. And so we created a good relationship, and now we have the, now we're honored to be able to be partnering with Voda as a digital marketing partner at Rhino, which is awesome to help his Z's out. But I want to give a nice, hearty, warm welcome to my friend, Mr. Dan Claps. You like that song? You've never heard that before in your entire life, have you?
At first, I didn't realize what was going on, and then I realized what he was saying. So I gotta start waking up to that as my alarm.
Well, if you listen to the rest of the song, it's got some additional meaning to it. But for the purpose of this, it actually worked because, you know, it's not clap, it's claps. Okay. But Dan, welcome, bro. Glad to have you on here finally.
Well, thanks. Thanks, guys, for having me. It's funny, a little story. When we met, we hit it off. We were at some lobby bar at this conference, and, you know, whenever I go to network, I have two objectives. One, be nice to everyone, get to know everyone. You never know where things can go. And then two, build 1 to 2 deep relationships. I used to go to conferences trying to build a million, but now I try to build 1 to 2. What I thought was interesting is I didn't know anything about you. I didn't know you had this company. I happened to have been on the mission to find a marketing partner, but you're very humble. So you invite me to go out. I'm like, let's go out. We'll grab dinner. And then you say to me, you know what, actually this event I'm at, there is dinner. I said, okay, great. So I go to the event and I realize the event is the main event, which also happens to be your event. And I just thought it was funny because I'm like, wait a minute, who the hell did I just meet? And you know, rest is history. But it goes to show, when you're networking, be nice to everyone because you never know who you're networking with.
Yeah. And actually it was like the end of, I think, the party towards the end. It was a pretty great event too. And we had sponsored it. And, but technically it was just an event, Dan, just an event that we attended together, but it was great. We had a fun night that night and we got to connect more, and he's built a great business, which is why he's on here. And, I think Chad, you and Dan are pretty close in the same age. And it's just impressive, you know, cause you know how it is, Chad, building in multi-location, you know, multi-services. And it's like there's a lot of moving parts of that business. I mean, in that franchise world, that's a whole different beast. Dan, how many actual Z's do you have now? Z's meaning franchisees. How many do you have now? Or at least locations. Let's go with locations.
We have 82 franchise partners in the system.
Got it. Okay. That's a lot of people, a lot of leaders to lead, brother. Now, one thing about you that I learned from listening to the episode that you did with Tommy, I think it was like middle of last year or something like that, maybe, was you kind of like me, you kind of knew coming into this world, like you were an entrepreneur from like the lemonade stands to all that stuff. But one interesting story I heard about you and your entrepreneurship that I thought was great was the little trial run you did with your dad's bourbon collection. selling your dad's bourbon. Wait, and you were a teenager, right? Like, and you thought, hey, you know, I think I could sell this bourbon. Like, maybe just share real quick with Chad. First off, anybody who knows me knows I am a bourbon collector. I have lots of really great bourbon. So when I heard your story, I cringed, and I've been wanting to know if you remember any of the actual bourbons that you sold, so that way I can feel your dad's pain.
Oh man, I sold everything. The Booker's, the Nakers Mark. I had no idea. The story goes like this, Chad. So I've always been, you know, probably similar to you. Like, I've always had side hustles. When I was a kid, I had the lemonade stand, and then I would sell lacrosse balls to my teammate by, you know, buying them in bulk. And when I was in high school, my dad, you know, he was in business, and I guess in his corporate career had earned a lot of really nice bourbons, and they were down in the basement, and they were dusty, and they were, I guess, I always thought he forgot about them, and they weren't any use to him, I thought. And so I started, you know, not super proud saying it now, but I started selling them out of my mailbox. So people would come and they would buy the bourbon, and then I'd make money. I learned supply and demand, because the prices changed depending on when you were asking for them, who you were asking for it with. And yeah, then one Christmas Eve, he went down and all the bourbons were gone, and I had to pay back all my profits, because I had 100% profit margin on this business, if you can imagine. No marketing, no supply costs, no cost of goods. So it was, it hurt when I had to pay that back.
There's a couple things that stand out to me real quick. The glaringly obvious one to me is, you're how old at this age, Dan?
Oh man, I must have been like, you know, I don't know, 14, 15.
That's the glaringly obvious one to me is, who's buying from you? 14, 15 years old. And how do you notice? I mean, I guess you knowing who to sell to is one thing. I guess you must have just been like out prospecting.
Yeah, I mean, you're in high school. You know, this is my worst story, though. Be honest, like, this is my worst business venture. I've definitely cleaned up my act, stealing things and selling them. But this was definitely a lesson for me.
Hey, this is part of the journey, man. You learned a valuable lesson, right?
Yeah. I'm just imagining your parents going over to like some friend's house. Hey, yeah, where'd you get this nice bottle of bourbon? I've got one down in the basement. I actually bought it off your son. It's awesome. He's running quite the gamut over there. Like, how that didn't come up before he went down there to look and there wasn't anything left. I'm not really sure, but that's awesome.
Got this nice bottle of Pappy I picked up for $20.
Yeah,
we didn't have that. Middle class, upper middle class, I guess. I'm not sure, but we didn't. It stopped at like Maker's Mark.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good. That actually does make me feel better, because otherwise I was just sitting there thinking, like, damn, I wish I would have known you. I wish I'd had a 14-year-old sell me something.
Well, by the way, that was the worst part about it. You know, we had no, you know, we were kids. I had no idea what they were worth. So yeah, not super proud of that, but I will tell you, thanks, Dad, because it was definitely a shaping moment in my business career.
Shout out to your pops for that. Okay, hey, listen, I want to get into this story. All right, we got the ball rolling, but I almost forgot, and then I didn't want to let you down, Chad. I almost forgot that I have a couple dad jokes.
Oh boy.
Okay, Dan, you ready for this? I got a few dad jokes. All right. You don't have to laugh. Don't feel obligated. But I have three I'm going to share. I'm going to work through them quick so that way we can get to it. Okay, Chad, you ready? This is very applicable to you specifically.
All right.
Why shouldn't you tell secrets in a cornfield?
I don't know.
Too many ears.
Mm.
Okay, next. That's a good Indiana joke, right?
That is. That's good. I'll probably never use that again. Thank you.
Thank you. Little people like that one when he understands it. Why couldn't the bad sailor learn the alphabet? Because he always got lost at sea. Come on. That's pretty good. Unless I bombed on the delivery. I switched up the delivery a little bit. No? Okay. Fuck me.
Yeah,
let me try this last one.
All right.
All right. This week, while we're recording this, is Waste Management Open Week. Dan, you know what that is? Okay. It's a big golf tournament or a big golf tournament out here in Phoenix, Arizona called the Waste Management Open. It's huge. It's kind of like Carb Day at the Indianapolis 500. I'm assuming it's like the Kentucky Derby. I'm not sure. I mean, probably a little bit less fancy. But Chad, it's like pretty much, you know, that you're coming out to it here in the next couple of years. You have to, because it's like a Carb Day.
Don't diminish Carb Day like that. I mean, that's a damn near holiday here.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I apologize to all my Indiana folks listening. I'm sorry. But in honor of the Waste Management Open, that on the week we're recording this is coming up this week. Actually, it's already happening. Why did the golfer bring two pairs of pants?
Hey, Chad Peterman here. I've been all in on Blue-on for quite a while now, and it's not just me. Contractors all over are seeing similar results. Tony at Just In Time Heating says their support calls dropped immediately once they rolled it out. His techs get reliable answers from Blue-on's AI faster than what they get from the OEMs. And their parts guy, he's loving it too. It's made his job way easier. They're saving time, solving problems quicker, and feeling more confident in the field. Blue-on's just become part of the process. And yeah, Peterman Brothers is definitely seeing that impact too. Click the link in the description and book a quick demo. You'll get it.
Casey got a hole in one. Oh. Okay, listeners, thank you. Thank you for listening to my dad jokes. You know, some of you have actually used some of these dad jokes already. You know you have. Okay, so don't act like I'm just up here telling you jokes. You're using them, and you're welcome. And so are you, Chad. And Dan, guess what? Now you have a few in your bag of tricks too. Okay, let's get to the good shit. Hey, this guy, Dan, man, you have what? I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was like you got this award for being one of the fastest growing franchisors, or is it franchise in general? And I don't know if it was like in the U.S. or whatever it was, but the point is like you're building this thing and growing it fast, so you're doing some shit right. It's not just from me meeting you and liking you. It was actually like, hey, I do like you, but I also understood the talent that you had and then saw what you were building, and clearly somebody else has recognized the same thing. What was that? I wasn't like that long ago that I just read it.
Well, thankfully we've won a variant amount of awards this year. It's funny, I don't think I've been there for any of them because I at the time and I happened to travel somewhere or something would change. We've won some awards for our growth. My favorite award is we won an award Franchisor of the Year at one event, which was based on not just growth, but like an overall culture and other statistics. So it's been a great year. We started franchising in April of 2023. So between then and now, we've grown to 82 owners and growing continually. What I will point out, and I think it's important, and we'll get into in the episode, is we're growing the exact rate we had set out to, not any slower, not any faster. I really do believe in the idea of reverse engineering your goal from 20 years, 10 years out, and then working back into the daily goal. And we've eerily hit our goals on the nose from day one, which has been pretty cool.
Yeah. And I'll be interested to hear like how you're accomplishing that or like what you're putting in place to do that. Cause I see, you know, I traveled a bunch. You quadrupled the volume that I travel, and I'm so grateful for that. Actually makes me feel good about myself when I just watch where you're going all the time because it's never ending for you. But let's do this. Let's take just a quick step back because we have an idea of where you're at right now. But you also kind of came from this franchise lead gen guy, you know, days that you spent and being able to connect franchisors to potential franchisees, right? And then also kind of into the actual lead generation business of, you know, bringing in lead volume, kind of the world that I've been in. How the hell did you end up in the actual, like how did you end up, you know, being a franchisor and what made you pick cleaning and restoration, or did it pick you?
Sure. Well, first thing I'll say is, you know, as an entrepreneur, I'm really big on you find a problem and you create a solution, and then you find the person that can solve that solution and bring them into the team, right? And so, you know, Richard Branson, he's the billionaire that billionaires want to be because he's not just rich, he's also got lots of time. So one of my favorite sayings that he says is, go find the number two person at the number one company and ask them to come work with you as your partner. And so that's always been my kind of, I've always had someone in my business that that is better than me. And so backstory in college, I graduated from the bourbon business to a more legitimate business, which was in the staffing and recruiting. I was at college. I remember people saying, you know, you got to go to college to get a good job. I never heard you got to go to college to get to own a great business. And so my focus in college was always on my side business or side hustle, which then eventually grew into a business. In my early 20s, I didn't want to do that business anymore. And I wanted to sell it. I learned that I didn't have an asset at all. I always tell people I can teach you how to run a business because I could teach you how to not run a business. If someone wrote a book like, you know, How to Not Run a Business 101, they could make my college business like I could be the star of the book. Because I had no systems, I had no people, I had nothing. It was just me working 7 days a week. And so in my early 20s, I started looking at, you know, franchises. My dad said, what about franchises? It kind of stood out to me because they're all about systems and processes. And so in 2014, ended up joining a franchise system. I looked at home services, but at that time, I couldn't afford a home service business. So I got into a business brokerage. So you help people buy and sell businesses. And that was in 2014. I did that for about 2 years. And in 2016, I looked in the mirror and I realized that I again was building like a self-employed business, not a business. I was the business. And I distinctly remember being at a vacation. I was supposed to have one day off. Like it was like a weekend trip, you know, and everyone took the Monday off. This is probably my first day off in like a year. And everyone's out on the beach, you know, playing beach volleyball, having a good time. And I'm in the room looking out the window on the phone. And you might be like, well, you're working from the beach. No, this was supposed to be my only day off that, like, you know, whatever amount of time. And I realized that I was a slave to my business. Like if I didn't answer the phone, then I didn't make money. And so I ended up leaving that and realized that in everything I had done, it was all about lead generation. I was good at getting people to want to use my services. And so 2016 started a lead generation company in the franchise space and then grew that for almost 7 years till 2022 until it was acquired by private equity.
And now here you are.
Yeah, that's the backstory. And then, you know, one day I had a pretty nice life and I said, let me screw it up and start a franchise company. No, in all seriousness, knew I wanted to be a franchisor. Since I'm 22, my whole business has centered around helping people get into business for themselves. And so what I love about what I do is I don't just help them get into business, but I go through the entire, and trust me, it's emotional, the entire emotional roller coaster that 82 different franchise owners go through, the highs and the lows. And I really enjoy seeing them come through that to the other side.
Did you say since 22? Because you're not 22. I thought I heard
I started at 22 years old, since I was 22 years old.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. But you're mid-30s now, right?
32.
Okay. That's low 30s. Whatever. Dear God, these youngsters. Chad, you can listen. Chad's old compared to you. I'm old compared to Chad. Oh, God. Okay. Well, listen. And it takes a special kind to want to be a Zor. Especially, you know, one who is growing at the pace you are, because you have all of these leaders or people that you need to be leaders in these individual locations, and they're trying to scale and grow, and you're the one and get them to follow the SOPs and like all this stuff. And you're probably, you know, in a constant firefighting position, I'm assuming, you know, because there's lots of variables in across all these different locations. But why, what made you end up choosing the cleaning and restoration business? By the way, like, you know, you know this because we, you know, Rhino has worked in the restoration business with other, you know, franchisors, and, it's actually a great business. So like, there's a lot of upside on that side, but the unique thing about yours is the cleaning and restoration has set you apart from a lot of the other, competition. But why did you pick cleaning and restoration?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. When someone starts a franchise business, they typically have succeeded in roofing or plumbing or whatever business they were in, gym, and then they want to franchise it, and which is great. But they go into a completely new business, right? Being a franchisor, supporting franchise owners is totally different than the actual business. And so It's given me a unique lens being in a franchise executive entrepreneur in restoration, not a restoration owner that went into franchising. We have great people on the team that had that restoration experience. But when I was looking at what to do next, between myself and our co-founder and my team, we took a piece of paper, we called it our playbook, and we said, what do we want out of a business? And we wanted these things. We wanted a need, not a want business, something that wasn't affected by, you know, a change in the economy or, you know, at that time, we're thinking about the pandemic. We wanted a business that a third party paid. So in our case, insurance pays the bills. I always think of the movie War Dogs. The government's paying the bills. Like in this case, the insurance pays the bills. We wanted an industry that was non-skilled labor, like something where you could train people with a good attitude. And then finally, we wanted an industry where the unit economics, no matter what, made sense. Like if I go to RIA, there's plenty of people doing phenomenal in that industry. Same like roofing, HVAC, right? So for us, restoration really screamed out. But the negative is, you know, unless I, you know, stick a hose through Chad's window there while he's sleeping and flood his office, I can't make him, you know, dry a dry office, right? It's a need, not a want. And so the fact that we do the floor cleaning, which, you know, floors, tile grout, you know, upholstery, et cetera, gets us in the door with property managers, in the door with plumbers, gets a recurring, but a predictable revenue stream. And that's really what is separating us from a franchise perspective.
Got it. Hey, Chad, did you hear him say drying? You know what that made me think of immediately?
No.
Your buddy that has that business of, he puts those dryers in for after the floods or flooding and things like that happen, and how successful the business has been.
Yeah, they crush it. He says, I'd make a whole ton more money if I didn't have to rebuild it. Because that's where the tough part comes in. If I could just dry stuff out and, you know, pick up my fans when it's dry, I'd be crushing it. But then they want me to rebuild it. And that's where you got subs and construction timelines and getting paid by insurance and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, I can't remember if that was your buddy or what, but I remember you telling me that story.
Mm-hmm.
It's an optics thing too. You're excited when your house gets dried during the emergency, but you know how construction is, the rebuild is always, people are not as happy with that experience.
Yeah. I got a question. So on the, when you started it, you know, like you said, most people, they have a business, they know how to operate it, all of that stuff. What was kind of the foundation for being able to scale kind of the SOPs and different things like that? And, you know, did you build like one particular location and this can be kind of the model, and then that gives, you know, the franchisees like a, you know, a basis for what they're getting into? How did all that kind of initial kind of build out look?
Yeah. Well, when we knew we wanted to be in restoration, between myself and our COO, who was running a home service brand in a different space, in the kitchen remodeling space, for over 10 years, he was president of that franchise chain. When we knew we wanted to get into restoration, we found an incredible founder who's a partner in the business now. His name is Dragan. And it's, yes, Dragan, like a dragon. He's Serbian, and it's pronounced differently, but he goes by Dragan. He built this incredible business in Northern Virginia, started it in 2009. True American dream, moved here from Serbia, didn't speak any English in 2004. Was a lifeguard, then a security guard, got married, started cleaning carpets, like literally himself. And just built this incredible, you know, multi-million dollar business in 15 years of trial and error. And so when we partnered with the business, made the acquisition, we had someone that had done the work. Like, because I'll be the first to tell you, my franchise owners and your listeners, I haven't extracted water, and I understand that, you know, being a little bit different, I have a different lens. We have Dragan and some of our other members of the team that have been there and done that and grown from, you know, 100,000 the first year to whatever, you know, we're doing now. And so there was that foundational business, and then we took that and started franchising it.
That's awesome. One other question I had, so, you know, and I think Chris touched on this a touch or a little bit, is, you know, with 80, what'd you say, 82, you know, franchisees, how do you look? I think one question I get a lot is, you know, we've got multi-locations, not nearly as many as that, but, you know, the I think the difficult part is, especially with a franchise model, you've got all these process, procedure, kind of the culture that you want to, you know, kind of exude from the brand and all of that stuff. How do you go, or how do you think about that? I know when people ask me, it's not so much like, how do you do it? There's a lot of elements of that, but like, how do you think about that as far as like, hey, this is the brand, this is what we wanted to represent. Now, how do I get 82 people all across the country to do that?
Yeah, it's challenging. A couple of things I'll tell you. And I'm from New Jersey originally. I'm very direct. And, you know, people listen to this that don't know me, I'm sure my franchise owners will listen to this too. I just say what I mean, and I'll say it to anyone. If they're listening, I would tell them the same thing. It's challenging because when you first start, people buy in and they're completely different than the people at 82 owners, right? The people coming in with 82 owners, there's a lot more of a track record. And I feel like they're a lot more willing to follow the process. Typically, the earlier owners who, first of all, just to be clear, we wouldn't be anywhere without them. I love working with them. They're in a different position where they start with us and, you know, we've had bumps. I mean, it'd be crazy to say we haven't had bumps and we'll have more bumps. And so, you know, you definitely have some scars because we learned together certain things. So, you know, give you an example, you know, everyone could tell you that it's different, but it is true. Pricing changes in each market. You know, you want to believe that the pricing is going to be able to be the same, but in Northern Virginia and another market, they are different. And so we had to learn those things together with our franchise owners and still have to learn it. To answer your question around brand consistency, the best answer I can give you is you try really hard to lean into training and you try really hard to lean into getting buy-in. I think maybe it's different when you're a 20-year-old system with thousands of locations. But when you're a younger system like this, I think it's difficult to say, well, you know, Chad, you signed this agreement that you'd say you'd do it this way. I would say our business owners, they're franchise owners. And what does the bottom of their business card say? It says owner. They bought a business. They're not an employee. And so what we try really hard to do is say like, look, this is the way we know works really well, or we believe works really well. We're going to try really hard to get you to believe in that too, but we're never going to make you do it. We're going to try to get you to buy into it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. I mean, and I think that's about the only way you can go about it. I think sometimes people feel like, well, if I go to multi-location, I've got to, you know, be there every day and I've got to, you know, do that. And that's not sustainable. And so I think that there's, to your point, there's certain pillars that you lean into, whether that's training, here's the values, here's the brand, this is what we stand for. And you're hoping to find the right people who believe in that as well and can carry out that mission. It may look slightly different, but I think that as you scale, you've got to be okay with it not being so just uniform and rigid and everything like that, or else you're going to stunt your growth.
Yeah, just one more thing to add to that is you're exactly right. You have to give up a little bit of control, and then you put systems and controls in place. So giving an example, up until recently, we use a program called Consumer Fusion for review management, and I love them. And I get all the reviews to my inbox, and they go into a folder. And then recently, I actually changed it where I only see the 3 and below star reviews because it's exciting to see 5 stars, but like that's great. That should be the norm. And so now I'm always looking for, did we get a 3 star, which doesn't really happen often. But if we did, that's the stuff I'm really trying to focus in on. But it's trial and error. You know, you have a franchise owner that, you know, stops taking their shoes off when they go into a home or, you know, things like that. And you just have to constantly train and iterate on why it's important in small details.
Yeah, I have a thought around this because it is unique because they're all owners, right? But you have to be all marching, you know, in the same direction. At least, you know, unlike Chad, you know, you should be able to hear the beat and march to the same beat. Chad's a little off, but it's because he loves, you know, Justin Timberlake, he's got no rhythm. But he marched to the beat of his own drum. Seems to be working out okay. But you still have to get, you know, everybody rowing in the same direction as you. And these are owners, which you are, you know, you call that, and they're owners. Like they're owners who bought into a system and process that you have created, that you've proven that works, and you're trying to guide them down the direction, you know, to scale the business based off the playbook that you've got in place that constantly is probably improving as you've learned, I'm guessing. But you have to have some sort of regular you know, some regular cadence with these owners, these leaders, to get them to be better leaders, because some of them probably aren't leaders at all. You know, like there's a difference there. And as their businesses are scaling, you need them to be also good leaders. So are you doing some sort of regular ongoing like leadership training with these owners?
Yeah, it's a great question. So what we do a little bit unique from other franchisors, and I'm a little curious why more don't do this, because it's not super difficult to execute, but I guess it's because we've started this way foundationally. And so people have just all kind of, this has been the norm, if you will. But as a system, we meet every, unless it's a, you know, Christmas or something, we meet every Tuesday, every Wednesday, and every Friday, once a day. And each day is a different topic. So Tuesdays is positive power, where we just go over, like, you know, wins and sales training and the basics over and over and over. We do a segment on Lead and Thrive every other week, which is all centered around building culture and leading people. Every Wednesday is just sales training for anyone that wants to join on a script, constantly, you know, working rebuttals with like breakout sessions, et cetera. And then every Friday is a system-wide call, like a town hall. And candidly, the reason we've been able to grow is that Friday call, because I'm big with the idea of quick to conflict. And a lot of those Friday calls are phenomenal. Sometimes they're not, right? If we have a big issue as we grow, they come right to head on those calls. And I'm not afraid to sit on that call and hear it, you know? And so I think it's that camaraderie we have between those calls, those very frequent cadences, as well as our conferences together. And then we're constantly communicating through Microsoft Teams. Like the whole system is on one channel. And there's just constant like reminders and things like that going on every day.
Yeah, I think I'll add to that, because I know that we started my COO does a town hall at once a month with all the field professionals. And it has led to a lot of really positive things. I think as you get spread out and you get bigger, there's a lot of, you know, kind of we call it dumpster chatter, because that's usually where it happens at our place, is out by the dumpster after the meeting. You know, that guy's full of crap. He doesn't know what he's talking about. This, can you believe this? And I think it's just giving people a forum to, one, everything's not criticism. A lot of the times it's just misunderstanding of like, oh, well, I didn't even realize we had that. Or, well, I can't believe this policy. Well, no, it's actually not like that. Like, you actually use it like, oh, okay, well, that's good. And, but it takes kind of that one voice to kind of clear up those things, where a lot of times you just let all of these issues, you know, fester, and people are complaining about things that aren't even true.
I completely agree. And just feeling heard too, right? This big, like, you just want to feel heard and get buy-in. I mean, that's how you do it. To me, where do you lose the most continuity? I think it's in the sales encounters. I think it's in the sales presentations. And so not to like shamelessly plug them, but I see Rilla as a sponsor and on here. I mean, I just invested, you know, 100 licenses with Rilla on Friday night. And by the way, those guys, you want to learn selling, they're great at selling. Like, they made sure to get me signed. And I mean that in a good way, like in a compliment. Like they take their own preaching and they use it. But I think that's a big part. Like, we're trying to roll that out now. But I will tell you what I learned about Rilla that's really clicked for me. If you gave me a scientific calculator and asked me to do calculus, I can't just do calculus because you gave me a calculator, right? It's a tool. Rilla, I think I first looked at Rilla as like the trainer, and I've come to realize that it's just the tool for my team to train on. But we're really trying to get to the point where, and I don't know if I'll ever accomplish this, but every sales interaction is very similar around like what we say and how we deal with objections. That's something we're trying to get more consistent with.
Okay, I have a question. I'm going to take you back for a minute. So your very first location was where?
Texas, in Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. Okay. So how, well, okay, two-parter. One, how long was it before you brought on your second Z?
Yeah, we did something unique. Our first two Zs were neighboring to each other. So our first two franchise owners were in Dallas, and actually we built out Texas. We had seven owners in Texas. before we really expanded. And people don't know that part of the story. We had, you know, a lot going on in that market first. I will share something. It's interesting. Franchising is unique because if someone doesn't do well, it's our fault. And if they do well, it's there. It's like on them. Like, it's like, why am I paying you royalty? What did you do when it goes well? But it's interesting that one of the things I've learned, and again, I'm just being candid, is I have owners that bought, like my first franchise owner knew exactly what he was doing, right? Like, it was like literally me and our VP of development at a dinner table, and we had no Z's, and he knew what he was doing. And then as I went a little bit further, I have had owners that, I mean, again, our systems are phenomenal, and they've come beyond what you can imagine from when we first started. But I did have some owners that were like, you know, I don't know, they were like the 10th franchise owner, and they're like, where's the national accounts? And I'm like, you met me in a diner. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was clear that we're growing, and where we're going is substantial. But we started in Texas. We worked with that franchise owner. And by the way, the franchise owners that get into a system, any system, under, you know, 50 owners, let's say, those are true entrepreneurs. They're true pioneers. And what I'll leave you with is all of our relationships have been working together, understanding that it's not going to be perfect and that we're going to grow through it together, just like you guys have done in your businesses.
Yeah, I think what I was, you know, I mean, that all makes sense. I think what I was hoping to get from that is, you know, when you have your first, you know, 10 Z's, and now you get to this next batch of 20 owners, like, what are you learning shit like immediately in this thing that you're making, like major shifts, little shifts? Like, what's your, you know, theory on, you know, like, you probably caught some things that you had to fix, and you can't do all the shit at the same time. So you probably had to like plan, you know, you had to plan, you know, about what, how was that process from, you know, your first one or two or whatever to like the next batch of owners?
So I have 82 really smart people in this system. I'm going to ask you a question to answer your question. If you had 82 really smart people working on a problem together, rowing in the same direction for a year, we had 8. Really smart people working on the problem. Which one do you think would solve the problem better and faster? 82 or 8?
8.
You think so?
I do. Mainly because that's a lot of chiefs. If I have 82 chiefs versus 8 chiefs, I feel like they can get to an answer faster.
Fair enough. Chiefs. But my mindset is with 82 owners, like, we're working through problems at a rapid pace because it's 82 people all working together to figure out what's working, what's not working, and growing. And so, I found that is the number one thing, because the other thing is, like, if you're a franchise owner, and I completely understand this, you're not always going to listen to the franchise company. A lot of times you're going to listen to your fellow franchise owners. And so we found that community that we've built, they work together to help each other too. And it's not just like corporate franchisor. It's, hey, I'm a peer. I've been in the same position as you 6 months ago, and here's what I would have done differently. And that is kind of growing exponentially as we grow.
Yeah, that makes sense. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, you know, I get asked this question a lot, and I think it's something that we battle through, and we've had different strategies at different levels. What, from a franchisor perspective, have you kind of centralized? Like, hey, we can gain some bandwidth if we do this centrally, versus maybe not. And then also kind of the second part of that, are there things that you may have thought at first we need to decentralize and then brought them back in after you kind of, is there an example of that? I know we have some where we were like, oh, this is better. Is that one of your questions? Sorry there, buddy. I'm going to take it. But yeah, just kind of the maybe just a kind of your thoughts around kind of what to centralize, when to centralize, has any of that changed over time?
Great question, Chad. Great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. I mean, obviously, like, you know, technology around the CRM and project management, et cetera, that is all, it's important to be centralized. Our call center is centralized to a degree. Something we shifted was there are owners that want to answer the phone themselves or hire someone on their team to do it. And while I don't think an owner should answer the phone, I do understand the desire to when you first start. And so we do have flexibility. And we have varying different versions of that. So it's like, listen, if you want to have you and your team answer, but if you don't in the first, you know, two rings, let's have it go to the call center. Or some people are fully on the call center. There's these varying versions. I think that's been a good move. So centralized to partly centralized is what we did there. I think the marketing is a really good one. I just saw on a phone call with Chris earlier today, and as we build our partnership, we started out with a centralized, this is the marketing partner that you use, this is our vendor. And we found that that is not the way to do it. It's great from an economy of scale perspective and working with the partner, but the challenge with it is kind of twofold. One, I know if I was in a franchise, I don't want to have only one option. I would like to have multiple options. And so we really like giving multiple options, but not a buffet of options, you know, 3-4 options that all make sense, and then let the data tell us which one works best. We have had experiences where we had one vendor, and I remember getting on the phone with one vendor saying, you know, it's supposed to be that we get special treatment because of the size that we are. I feel like you guys are treating us like low on the totem pole because you know they have to use you. And we were getting less service than other companies. And so I've really become big on this idea of 2 or 3 vendors in each area. I think of the movie Whiplash. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like the drummer, the guy's always yelling at him. Or in sports, you got a, you know, second string. I think it's important to have that degree of competition between our partners.
Yeah, I think that's part of your responsibility though, right? Is to, because I mean, that's part of what they're buying into is you are vetting that process and those partners for them. So, and you can only fuck that up so many times where they don't believe you anymore, right? Like you lose that trust. Exactly what we were just talking about earlier. Cause I'm also a fan of being an option and earning it. I told you that. I'm basically had to do that forever at this point. So,
Sorry. I didn't mean to, I had too many energy drinks, but I'll just to add on that, you know, one more point, like on the marketing side, one of the things I'm challenged with is no matter what the expectations on marketing, if you've never owned a business, it's you know, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around that, like, it's not always the lead's fault that leads aren't converting. Like, I was just talking to a franchise owner in a different system on the weekend, and I was pretty fascinated because this guy, he's a friend of mine, and he's super, super successful. And we were talking about, like, LSA ads, and he's like, I need a different, and if you're listening, sorry, man, I'm calling you out here, but he was like, you know, I need a different LSA provider. And I was talking to him why, and next, because there's not much you could do with LSA. You know what I mean? There's only so much you can change. And we've realized that I was like, dude, like your guys aren't answering the phones. Like that's why LSA is not working. It's not the vendor. And so there's a lot of that we have to do. That's what I love about Rhino, because you guys have all the call recording metrics, but that's a big part of our job is the education on expectations.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
Chad, did I cut you off? I thought you were going to say something earlier.
No, I mean, I think he's exactly right. I mean, we've talked about this umpteen dozen times over the last couple of months is, you know, it's not always marketing's fault. A lot of it, they can get the phone to ring, but what do you do? There's a lot more steps after the phone rings to making sure that you get an ROI on that call.
Hey, I want to pivot real quick because we're getting close to this last topic around recruiting for your Z's, or how you help recruit for your Z's as they scale and they grow. Because you were in that game, it was just in recruiting is in a lot of ways. I've always thought of it's kind of like sales, right? Like you're trying to go out and find, you know, and sell someone on coming to work for the best talent and sell someone to come and work for your business or a location. And I've never been in recruiting, but that's the way I envision it going. But, you know, as this thing scales, you know, also a box you got to check is helping them find good talent, you know, and you want that as a franchisor. But like, what are you doing to help these guys, you know, find the talent to help grow these things? Like, is there some sort of process you have in place for them? And I mean, do they have any ownership in it? Are you running, you and your team at Voda, you know, on the executive level, running all that stuff? Or what are you guys doing to help them, you know, find good talent?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have a program called Talent Scout to help find people. At the end of the day, who they hire and what they pay and all those things are completely on the owner, because there are actually joint employer laws in franchising that don't allow us to get too involved in the hiring. What I would tell you, my biggest challenge with this is, and you guys know this from your years in business, is hiring people is not checking a box. You're not hiring someone to check the box. You're hiring the right people. And a lot of our owners are fast to hire and slow to fire. You know, the opposite of that, you know, old saying. So I'm always challenged by that because, man, I can't tell you, I hate letting people go, and I've to a fault at people for way longer than I should. And if there's anything I've learned after 10 years, I finally, still struggling with it, I've learned to make those changes. And so that's I know it's not really answering your question, but the recruiting side's challenging because, you know, at the end of the day, you could take your time hiring people. You don't really know until they come into the system, into your company. And I wish I could get owners to make those changes a little bit faster when they know it's the wrong person. That's something we're trying to figure out. But as far as recruiting, we definitely have the ads the way that we know will work and the comp models that we suggest doing. I'm really big on giving equity out if they're able to, if the owner's willing to do something with phantom equity to their key stake, key holders. But we have a whole program to help them with that.
Yeah, phantom equity is interesting. Because I remember we kicked that whole idea around with key leadership. You know, phantom equity is definitely different than equity. I see what you're trying to do there. You're trying to get we're talking like talent, like somebody who's a leader in this business come in. So you're having those conversations with somebody who can actually impact the business. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like you've got this great business development, you know, person in your town that, you know, working for another company in restoration or in cleaning or something, and you want to bring them in. Well, why would they come work for your brand new business if they don't have upside? They're taking a risk. They should get upside. You know, when we started Voda, I did the same thing. My leadership team, you know, we're all, you know, have a stake in the company. And I don't know, man, to me, a lot of people that get into Voda, like they've done well. They're not just doing this to make money. They also want to, you know, enjoy what they're doing. And I think working with people that actually, you know, care about your business because they actually have a stake in it is just a hell of a lot more fun. And if you do it from the beginning, it's not always perfect, but I know for me, like my team, like the fact that we did this thing together when everyone doubted us between my COO and CMO and VP of development and the founder, there's this camaraderie that we have that I don't think I'll ever find again because we built it from the ground up. There's just something special about that.
Yeah, man, I agree. And like, this is not for the weak. It is a hard thing to do to build these things. And like I said, with you, the thing that's most interesting to me about you and just franchising in general or franchisors in general is just leading these owners. Like that seems, I mean, listen, it takes a special person, someone who really, you know, cares, you know, about, you know, these individuals and willing to help them, which is why you're all over the place all the time. Like I commend you, like you are who you say you are. Like I see you flying all over the place and doing all these things. So like you're walking the walk. I don't think I have any, we're kind of at the top of the hour. I told you guys I would be done by then, but, you know, I had a couple other questions here, but these are going to have longer answers to them. But these are things that I want to just, you know, have a little conversation with you about maybe while you're out at a Rhino X, because I'm excited you're coming to your first Rhino X, Dan. And you are going to have quite a good time. I just shared with Chad earlier today who the entertainment is, because I knew he'd be like, you know, falling out of a seat, you know, just in awe of who the concerts are. Concerts.
Yeah, already got the playlist rocking, so yeah. Watch out.
Yeah, Rhino X playlist. I should be creating one of those and sharing it. And I just thought about that. Wait, let's make note of that, team. All right, let's create a Rhino X playlist. We will be revealing the artists ahead of time. I originally was going to keep it a secret the entire time, but I can't. So I'll be revealing it. But Dan, listen, man. Like, I know that you are still just kind of like, in a lot of ways, just getting rolling with this thing, and you're doing a hell of a job, dude. And I think you're a good human being. If you guys can tell a little bit, you know, he's a good dude, genuinely cares about growing this thing the right way, not just building this thing to make money. Sharp guy. Like, we didn't even get to half the shit that we could have talked about in here to kind of, you know, share some of your talent and your knowledge. You know, but I'm glad to get you on here finally and brag on you a little bit. You know, and I'm glad to get you to Rhino X, you know, and you're going to get to meet a lot of really sharp people there. And I know you're constantly a student. That's half the game that we're all in, is constantly learning. You're going to learn some shit from some really exceptional, you know, contractors that have been doing it a long time in there that I know you'll take back and implement in the business.
Appreciate you guys having me on. If that's your way of saying I was long-winded, I know I'm guilty of that, especially with a little caffeine in me.
It's actually Chad. He's the problem. He's always just a talker. He's just been known as the talker his entire life.
Yeah. No, but Dan, I really appreciate you coming on. I've always been interested in kind of the franchise space and how we can take, you know, especially as it relates to process and procedure, how we can take that. And even though we may not be a franchise, it's still business. You know, maybe business that, you know, leans heavier on kind of the process and procedure, which will benefit any type of business. So appreciate you sharing kind of your journey and, you know, what you've been doing and all of those things.
Absolutely, guys. It's a pleasure to join you today.
All right, listeners. Well, you know, hit him up on social media. You can find him just about anywhere. You do a fantastic job with your social team, like a ton of video clips and stuff like that. So kudos to you. I watch them mainly because they pop up in my feed all the time because you do a lot of them. So it works between you and Tommy.
The algorithm to figure it out.
Between you and Tommy, I see a lot of you sons of bitches. That's a term of endearment I use, listeners. I think you know that about me. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys hopping on here, giving me your time, listeners. You don't got to do everything, but you got to do something. No 0 days.